there are certain presentations, drushos, where you are convinced that you would like to have a few hours at least. And the agenda of preparation is not so much to gather the material, but to refine the material and to reduce it. So hopefully we'll be able to accomplish something, but certainly we will not exhaust the topic. Hakoras Hatova, the very expression, recognizing the good, resonates with a specific message, with a specific intention. We have the word gratitude, thanks. And Hakora doesn't enter into the picture. There's no verb. Being grateful is having gratitude. Hakora Satova involves recognition of the Tova and doesn't project the Tova to anybody in particular. In other words, there is no thanksgiving. It's very interesting. In Latin is an expression, gratias tibi donum do. It's the long form of thank you. We used to have a donor, and he was somewhat eccentric, I suppose, but he gave a lot of money, and he always said that he had two speeches prepared whenever he would be called up to receive his honor or his plaque. He had a long speech and a short speech. The long speech was thank you very much, and the short one was thank you. And everybody loved him. There is in Latin gratias, but the long form of gratias is gratias tibi donum do. Tibi means to you, donum is a present, and do means I give. I give to you thanks as a present. An interesting perception. I offer you thanks. In Judaism, there is no such thing as giving thanks as a present, because it indicates that it's something that I could or could not do, that I might decide to give or not to give. A present is a gift. We do not give the gift of gratitude, we fulfill the obligation of gratitude. And to fully appreciate the term hakara, we need to delve a little bit more deeply into this whole concept of hodah and hakaras tova. Anyone who learns the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvot, or for that matter the Chinuch in his Sefer HaMitzvot, knows that the structure begins with the basic mitzvah and the most precise formulation of the halacha itself, and then delves into the philosophical and moral implications of that halacha as secondary to the formulation of the halacha itself. And therefore it is extremely telling, how is the Rambam going to formulate the mitzvah of the parsha of Mikra Bikurim, the portion that is read by those who bring the Bikurim, the first fruits, to the Beit HaMikdash? And we know that parsha very well, Hagam, that we don't bring the first fruits, unfortunately, to the Beit HaMikdash, but we know the parsha because we recite it every single Pesach on the Seder night. At the Seder, we recite the parsha of Arami Oved Avi. Now, Arami Oved Avi is that parsha that is recited by the one who brings the Bikurim. And the question is, why are we bringing it into the Haggadah? And the answer, of course, is because it is a synopsis of the story of our suffering and eventually the exodus from Egypt. But the question is that if you look at those psukim and you look at the Haggadah, you notice that the Baal HaHaggadah is not satisfied with quoting those psukim, and in any case brings the original psukim from Parsha Shmos. That's why you have K'mosha Ne'amar, as it says, K'mosha Ne'amar, as it says, and so on. So the question, of course, is obvious. If we are going to quote those original psukim to begin with, why do we have to go to Sefer Dvarim to a parsha of Mikra Bikurim, recite that parsha on the night of the Seder, only to reflect back upon those original psukim in Parsha Shmos anyhow? Why don't we simply stick to the Parsha of Shmos and bring those psukim themselves? The Rav asked this question in Shir and out of Shir many, many times, and he always gave the same answer. He said that we have many ways of speaking about something and describing an event. Everybody comes from his perspective, from her vantage point. And when someone analyzes and in a synoptic way puts together the essential elements of any event, he has to include certain things and exclude certain things. And the male of the picture is biased in a certain way. It has a certain formulation based on that person's understanding or comprehension of the events, according to what their personal agenda is. And therefore, the question is, what is being brought to the Seder by the perspective that is unique to the parsha of Arami Oved Avi? And then we will understand why we had to start from there and branch forth to the parsha of Shmos. The parsha of Arami Oved Avi formulates the Exodus experience in terms of Hakaras HaTovah. And therefore, it is equally obvious that if Chazal put that parsha into the Haggadah, our mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim requires that formulation which maximizes the Hakaras HaTovah which we show to Hashem. We have to use the terms that God himself gave us in Sefer Dvarim to speak to him in a language of gratitude about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it isn't the historical information, it isn't the personal experience, it isn't the conveying of certain emotions, it is essentially to declare our gratitude to Hashem. Now, how do we see in the Rambam's formulation in Sefer HaMitzvot that this element of Hakaras HaTov isn't simply an ancillary aspect of Mikra Bikurim, but is in fact the heart and soul of Mikra Bikurim? So let's look at that particular reference right now. Number five. It's a very short and very worthwhile to read together inside. Mitzvah Asay Kuf Lamed Beis, the 132nd Mitzvah Asay. Ba Mitzvah Kuf Lamed Beis Hi. Shetzivonu L'Saper Toivosov Asher Heitiv Lanu Behitzil Osanu. The wonders that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, the great good that he did for us, that he performed for us, and that he saved us. U'maschil be'inyon Yaakov Avinu. He begins with the fact that Yaakov Avinu himself was threatened by Lavan. U'misayim ba'avodas ha'mitzrim, the servitude that the Egyptians subjected us to, the inusam osanu, and the fact that they caused us so much hurt and suffering. U'lishabcho, and to praise Hashem al kol zeh, for all that he did for us to save us, both to save Yaakov from Lavan and to save the Jews from the Egyptians. U'levakesh mimenu, and then to continue to ask from Hashem, l'hasmida b'racha k'sheyavi ha-bikurim. The k'sheyavi ha-bikurim could just as well have been at the very outset. Had the Rambam written as follows, mitzvahs asei kuflamet beis hi, she-k'sheyavi bikurim yikra parsha zu, v'inyon ha-parsha hi, or who actually, inyon ha-zachar, inyon ha-parsha hu, and then continue, we would have understood it in a completely different way than the manner in which the Rambam presents it as he does. Because the Rambam is telling us the following. It isn't an explanation of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is Hakaras HaTov. What we call Hechad Timsa, the particular circumstance which allows us to fulfill this mitzvah of Hakaras HaTov, is the bringing of the Bikurim. And that's why he Dafka brings Sheyavi Bikurim at the very end of a very long sentence. Kishayavi Bikurim is the ancillary aspect. The mitzvah is Hakaras HaTova. And Mimela, if the mitzvah is Hakaras HaTova, then obviously the parsha is particularly suited in the description, in the depiction of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, to gain for us the understanding and to lend us those words which speak about Hakaras HaTov. And the very fact that we begin with Aram the Ovid Ovi is extremely telling. We don't have now time to go into that, again, that these are the parshios that we are in. But apparently our Hakaras HaTov, if we were left to our own devices, what would we have begun with if we're speaking about Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of Pesach? Certainly not with Aram the Ovid Ovi. Maybe with Vayered Mitzrayim, but not with Aram the Ovid Ovi. So we have to understand, what is Aram the Ovid Ovi doing here b'chlal? The answer is Hakaras HaTov. Okay, Hakaras HaTov, there's so many things to thank Hashem for. Why don't we thank Hashem for giving Avraham everything that he got, for giving Avraham a child as a miracle, as a nes? The answer is, V'hisha amda la'avoseinu v'lanu shalo efa dovad amad aleinu l'chalosenu. We say in the Haggadah that this experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were saved from the tyrant Paro, is only one episode in an entire chain which stretches until today. And every moment of salvation is a moment that we are grateful for on the night of the Seder. And since the parsha of gratitude to Hashem begins with Aram the Ovid Ovi, it teaches us that we have to be grateful also for the fact that every tyrant and loved one is the archetype, the first and most fundamental Rasha, Bikesh La'akor Es HaKol. Not too many Rishoyim Bikesh La'akor Es HaKol. You have a Hitler. We hope that that never repeats itself. But Bikesh La'akor Es HaKol is a monumental horror. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us from that in every generation. B'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'aloseinu. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzuleinu miyodo. So we see already that in the seeds of Hakaras HaTova we cannot begin with Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that's why it was essential to, amongst many other aspects and details of that parsha, why it was essential to recite that parsha and darshan that parsha and analyze that parsha in order to be able to fulfill the Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim obligation, which is inherently and essentially Hakaras HaTov. There is one other mitzvah. The only brachos that are midioraita, according to most shitos, there are no other blessings that are ordained by the Torah itself. What is that? Birkat Hamazon. So we happen in the yeshiva to be learning brachos, and Birkat Hamazon d'oraisa, certainly the first three brachos. We have a very interesting phenomenon called Birkat HaTov HaMeitiv. And we have another very interesting phenomenon called Birkat HaOreach. I'd like to dwell upon that just for a moment. Of all the blessings that we have, and we have now hundreds of them, we are surrounded by blessings. And there's an obligation to say, Me'o brachos b'chol yom, Mo Hashem elokecha, Shoel me'imach, the letters mem hei, al tipre mo, ela me'o. And the only brachos that the Torah commanded us are the brachos of Birkat Hamazon. Why? So the answer is, I believe there's a chazal that says this, but I cannot recall the exact location off the top of my head, nor off its bottom for that matter. But right now I cannot recall the, an interesting expression off the top of my head. But in any case, I don't know the source right now to tell you where you can find it. But there's an expression that when a person goes to the doctor and he's very sick, the doctor is for him a malach. When the doctor heals the patient, the doctor suddenly becomes just a regular person. And when it comes time to pay, the doctor suddenly is, I don't know what animal they compare him to, but whatever it is, he's a dog. You know, the idea of needing HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a person very generous in his praise and thanksgiving of Hashem. Until you don't need him anymore. You know, a person plants, what is Zroim, Seder Zroim called? V'hoyo emunas itecha emuna. The first order of Mishnayos, Zroim, dealing with planting, is called faith, emuna. Why is it called emuna? Because you have to have a lot of faith. So many things can go wrong. It could be a drought, there could be a pestilence, people can steal your crop or burn it down. Anything can happen. Until the food gets into your stomach, there's a long journey and many possibilities of failure. But finally you are satiated. Don't forget that the mitzvah d'oraisa is only when you are saveya, when you are full. Even though the Chachamim insisted that we should say Birkas Hamazon, provided that we eat a much smaller shiur, a much smaller amount, a kazayas or a veya, midoraisa, you have to be saveya. Once you're saveya, you forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the pasuk says as much in that very parsha, of Parshas Ekev and Sefer Dvarim. Ram levavecha v'shachachta es Hashem Elokecha. And what will you say if you forget Hashem? About all that planting and harvesting and all that you put into it that made you so successful. Kochi ve'otzem yodi asu li es achayil hazeh. You forget about Hashem, immediately there's no vacuum, there's never a vacuum. You forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, immediately you attribute it all to your own powers, your own capacities, your own talents, your wisdom, your understanding. And that is the purpose of Birkas HaMazon, to cut it off at the pass and say, Yosaveya, now what? I thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was really all from you. And that is the reason why the bracha of Noda Lecha, I believe, is the essential bracha of Birkas HaMazon, the second bracha. And I have a bit of a proof for it. Because when the Chachamim introduced the bracha Achas Me'ein Shalosh, what we call Al HaMichya, the blessing that we say after eating mizonos or after eating grapes, what is the essential feature? Well, you just have to look at the last words before the final bracha, before the Baruch Atah Hashem that comes at the end. V'node lecha al ha'aretz v'al ha'michya. V'node lecha al ha'aretz v'al ha'peros. Why v'node lecha? That's the second bracha. Why did we abandon the sequence? We already mentioned al ha'michya, that's bracha number one. We already mentioned al eretz chem d'tov v'rechava, that's number two. We already mentioned rachim na boni yushalayim al yushalayim irecha, number three. Why do we go back to v'node lecha? So the answer, because no delucha is me'ein hachasima. What's me'ein hachasima? Ala oretz ala mitzya, ala oretz ala peru. But what is that reminiscent of? Which of the three brachos? Ala oretz ala mazon, the second one, which begins with no delucha. Why? Why did they do that? The answer is because the essential birkas hamazon is an ala mitzya. It's a synopsis. It's the brief form, the short form of the entire benching. If that's the case, you have to zero in on its most salient feature, which is gratitude. The whole of Birkas HaMazon is gratitude. What's fascinating, Beitar was being decimated, the Romans were completely ascendant, extremely powerful, they were wiping out all of the Jewish community in Beitar, and to add insult to injury, they refused to allow them to bury their dead. Finally, a nes occurred, and they relented. And the nes was evident in the fact that during that entire time when the bodies had to lie in the sun, they did not decay. Because had they just relented, so they changed their minds. Big deal. How does that prove that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had anything to do with it? But the bodies did not decay. And so they finally buried their dead, and afterwards they established a bracha, which they appended in all of all places, Birkat Haman. Why? So I believe the answer is the following. And I think it's an extremely important yesod, which is relevant both in terms of our relation to Hashem today, and perhaps even more so in relation to other human beings today. You see, there is a sense of gratitude that a person has when you are giving him everything. And when, because of what you are doing for him, he is powerful, he is happy, he's in an extraordinary frame of mind, he's on his way to grab the gold. What happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that good to you? It's called Yemot HaMashiach. But what happens when there's Churban? So you say, Ribono Shel Olam, I have to thank you for something. I have to thank you for coming to the Golden Medina and making something of myself. When the poverty was so terrible that we were losing Yidden to starvation and to assimilation just because they were hungry. So I have to thank you, Ribono Shel Olam, that I finally got enough money to make a passage in the bottom of a boat, and I didn't know if I was going to live or die and come to New York and suffer so many nisyonos, and finally I made it and I was matzliach. For that I have to thank you. I have to thank you, Ribono Shel Olam. I just went through my last dose of chemo and I wasn't so nauseous. I have to thank you, Ribono Shel Olam, for that. Comes along a bracha in Birkat HaMazon and says, it's not just Al Ha'aretz Va'Al HaMazon. It's not just what David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech said in their bracha for Yerushalayim, for the continued success of an extremely successful Malchus. But even when everything is bleak and miserable and dark, and you think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in fact Master Panim, you think that he's abandoned you completely. And there's one little ray of light in this incredible, immense darkness. For that also I have to thank you, Hashem. Chachomim paskind. Yes. And in that understanding that we owe Hashem gratitude, there lie two fundamental principles which are so essential. Number one, that obviously Hashem has not abandoned us. And that is an extraordinary nechama. Number two, that we deserve nothing. And really, the yesod of Hakaras HaTova has to begin with that. We deserve nothing. You know that Reb Moshe Feinstein used to say very often, and I believe it's repeated from him many times and in various forums already by now, that when we daven on Rosh Hashanah, we have this peculiar tendency to take for granted that which we have, as if that, as they say in the expression, in the bag. That's a given. We are entitled to it because we have it. It's a peculiar concept. Because we already have it, we're entitled to it. And the mailer, what do we ask for? Always ask for the things that we do not yet have. Some of those things are very important. Some of them are probably narishkeit. But Reb Moshe says, important or not, we're missing the entire point. Rosh Hashanah is a judgment that is afresh on the person from beginning to end. On everything that he has. His life, his health, his years, his nachas, his parnosa, the works. And it all starts now. Mizonosav shel Adam ketzuvim doesn't mean the bonus. When a person is being judged, what his parnosa is going to be, it starts from $0. And now the question is he going to have a job this year? Is he going to be matzliach in his parnosa? Is the company going to survive? And so on and so forth. That is all part of the cheshbon. The truth of the matter is, when it comes to Hakaras HaTova, Reb Moshe was saying what it is that we're being judged about and how seriously to take our tshuva. But my perspective is about the very same thing, but from the angle of Hakaras HaTova. if you are always aware that you do not necessarily deserve anything at this very moment, then the Hakaras HaTovah is for all the things that you have. And when a person starts counting the things that he has, counting his blessings, all of a sudden there's a different picture entirely. But if a person focuses exclusively on what he does not have, then of course, besides being perpetually miserable and unhappy, he also commits a terrible crime, because he does not fulfill the obligation that the Rebbeinu Shlom expected of us to be makir tova to him. And then, of course, if you go to the extreme of that, you end up with the person that is called a nirgun, nun resh gimel nun. Now, I'm not exactly sure if there's one word that in English that translates the word nirgun. You might say a complainer. I would like to use several words together, b'vatacha. This is a person who's a creep. He's a miserable fellow who never sees good in anybody or anything, always interprets everything l'chova in a negative manner, and delights almost in finding fault. That's a nirgun. Unfortunately, I have encountered some of these people in the years of my rabbonis especially. The Sharon Shuvah Rabbeinu Yonah apparently also encountered such a person, because the way he describes him, he must have known him quite well. Look at number 6. Achelek Ashishi Nirgon, Omar Shlomo Olav HaShalom, the pasuk of course in Mishlei, Divrei Nirgon Kim Islahamim Vehem Yordu Chad Bevatem. Pirush, HaNirgon Hu Ish Asher Darko V'Chuko, his way, his habit, his own name to complain to Israel, the Yimtza to Nuros, Al Chaveiro Tomit, to Unos. In any case, it means, I can't vouch for the spelling, it comes off of whatever program they took it off of, and sometimes these, they didn't do the spell checking well enough, and sometimes you have spelling mistakes. That's why when you do a search sometimes, certain things don't come out, and other things do, because of spelling mistakes. So Bar Ilan is almost perfect, but not quite, and the rest of the programs are much less perfect, unfortunately. But in any case, you get the picture. This is a person that always finds fault. Al Maisa, Al Dvoro, a person's actions, a person's words. Va'afal Pisha Chaveiro Betumo Mishalechimo V'lozod Olav Bedov. Now, where is this phenomenon most profoundly felt, and perhaps most often occurring? I mean, I'm not talking about a nirgun who is a nirgun, you know, that's his title. I'm talking about the vast majority of people, husband and wife. And really is the source of most problems of shalom bayis. The idea of finding fault is rooted to a very great extent also in the idea that I deserve something more or better or different. Again, if you start from the notion that I don't deserve you, no matter who you are, I think that there would be a great deal of happiness, because whatever it is, a person from their spouse gets a tremendous amount on many, many different levels. It's only when you take all of that for granted as a given, and you assume that you could have done better if you would have married somebody else. And this, of course, is the great Torah of Shalom Bayis, that a person is never satisfied. And of course you'd say, but there are certain things that I need that I just don't have. Well, that's probably true. But again, what is the perspective? Where does that perspective come from? And furthermore, what about you? Are you providing everything? She's the most glücklicher person in the world, or vice versa? The notion that I deserve is a very fragile notion. In Yahadus, the Rebbeinu Shlom is constantly telling us through his Avodah HaNeviim, don't be so confident about what you think you deserve, because maybe you don't really deserve it. And every Cheshbon HaNefesh that finds the person's own fault should satisfy that person that with all of his Milos, she has to live with his chatranot too. So it's a two-way street, and it's a matter of accepting. It's a matter of not judging. It's a matter of not judging in the negative. It's a gewaldike yisod. By the way, in Birkas Hamazon, after teaching us the second principle, that even in the dark you find good, which we can apply to marriage, of course, as well, there's a third principle, and that is the Birkas HaOreach. So before we go back to this nirgun, I'd like to tell you something about Birkas HaOreach. It is really, on the surface, an extraordinarily peculiar idea. Why so? Because after all, Birkas HaMazon is supposed to be focused exclusively on Hashem. Why bring the Oreach into it? Why don't you just go over to the Oreach and thank him? What is the bracha to the balabayit that the guest says? Whether it's the nusach of the Gemara, Yiratzon Shelo Yevosh Balabayit Bolam Hazeh, or it's the lashon that many benches have, Harachaman Hu Yevarech as Balabayit Hazeh. What is that doing in the Birkas HaMazon? Unless you think, by the way, that halachically it's not connected to the Birkas HaMazon, it just happens to be one of those many harachamans that you say, you should know that many poskim hold that the bracha for the oreach has to be immediately after al yachasreinu, with nothing in between, and furthermore that when the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Brachos the bracha that the oreach, the guest, makes for the Baal HaBayis, he says, Mosifin ba in Hatova Ameitiv bracha l'Baal HaBayis. And it's pretty clear that what the Rambam is saying is that this is an extension of Hatova Ameitiv. So why is that? Hatova Ameitiv is speaking about Hashem. You're supposed to mention Hashem as Melech at least three times. So why add the Baal HaBayis? I'll tell you, the answer is very simple. For all that we speak about Hashem, he is and remains an abstraction. He's an Ein Sof. To thank Hashem, if you don't thank the flesh and blood that physically put the food on the table before you, which you are eating, means that you are not really thanking Hashem at all. If a person doesn't have the capacity to thank his host in a meaningful way and to bless him for the victuals that are in front of him, for the food that is put on the table, then he cannot possibly be serious or sincere in his gratitude to Hashem. So the Chachamim said, you know what? We'll put it in the benching. And if he can say the Birkas HaOreach to the Baal HaBayis, he has justified and reclaimed the authenticity of his Birkas HaMazon. The Nirgun says the Sha'arei Tshuva, Yodun kol dover l'chova v'lo l'tzchutz. He will say that the person really meant me harm, and he will never find any saving graces. V'chol shgoga yosim l'zadon. And if chas v'sholem, it might be interpreted that he erred, he made a mistake, he didn't mean it. No, of course he meant it. V'hina yitein atzmo k'mo ashuk v'holom. And finally he says, in the consequence of this, of course, is that he's always meshiv ra'a tachas tova. And the last four lines of this piece, of number six, Upa'amim Rabbos Hanirgon Kofui Tova. He's an ingrate. Gam Yachshav Olara. He turns the good into a negative. The Yoshiv Ra Tachas Tova. The Ne'amar Meshiv Ra Tachas Tova Lo Somash Ra Mi Beis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shrofu punishes the person who's Meshiv Ra Tachas Tova. By the way, the Nirgon is someone that maybe you shouldn't have Rachmanis on, but it's a big rahman. Because the nirgun is never happy. And the nirgun is never satisfied. And the nirgun is perpetually paranoid. And the nirgun makes everyone around him miserable, so he has no friends, because everyone tries to stay away from him. That person then, when he's walking towards you, you say, uh-oh. And that, of course, is the punishment of the nirgun itself. Being a nirgun is punishment enough. So the Sha'arei Tshuva, the Rabbeinu Yonah, brings one of the most astonishing psukim in the entire Torah and uses that as the example of nirgun. And in fact, that's where the word nirgun comes from. Vateirognu ba'aleichem vatomru. B'sinas Hashem al-sanu hotzionu me'eretz Mitzrayim. Lasseis al sanu biyadho emori lahashmideinu. Now, this is very interesting. Before we translate this pasuk, the story of the Meraglim appears twice in the Torah. Once when it occurred in Parsha Shlach, and once when Moshe Rabbeinu is rephrasing and reformulating it in its synopsis in Parsha Dvarim in Sefer Dvarim. In Sefer Dvarim, he reveals some of the emotional aspects that were hidden in Parsha Shlach. And he says that the impact of the Meraglim was so profound upon the men, because the women, by the way, did not participate in the Chait HaMeraglim, because they have more faith, they have more confidence, they have more trust in Hashem. It's as simple as that. But the men failed, and therefore they cried. They just cried. They refused to go. They just refused to go. Moshe Rabbeinu reveals to us something absolutely fascinating. They turned everything that Hashem did from the time that they came out of Mitzrayim into a negative. They said, forget about the Mon, forget about the Mayim, forget about all of the enemies that we conquered. Forget about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of slavery. Forget about the fact that He split the sea for us. It was all the act of a demonic aspect that Hashem must have. A sadism that He's raising our hopes and constantly bringing us to the brink of success in order to dash those hopes and to cause us ultimate annihilation. Now you really have to be sick to think that about HaKadosh Baruch Hu after all that they went through. The Dor Deyon. That's what Meraglim can do. You could imagine the pit that they had descended into. The impact of the Meraglim is not understood until you get to this pasuk in Sefer Dvarim Parshas Dvarim. Vateroglu ba'aleichem, you turned everything good into a negative. Batomru. And Ba'aleichem means not to Moshe Rabbeinu. This isn't a delegation that's coming to Moshe to analyze the political situation that they're in. It's the Sifra Kala, Bein Ish Leishto, Bein Chaver Lechavero, Bein Ach Lo'ochiv. Ba'aleichem Batomru. The Sinas Hashem El Sonu. Chotzionu Me'eretz Mitzrayim. You know why Hashem did all of this? He wants to blind us and fool us, but we're on the precipice. There are going to be only so many lemmings that are going to jump into the sea. That's what Hashem finally wants to do. But He's not happy doing to us right away, because that could have happened in Yom Tov. No. He wants to raise our hopes. He wants to give us confidence. He wants us to lose our guard. And then He wants to destroy it completely. Pure explaining the level that the Nirgun can go to, but of course if that happens, then obviously every Tova is erased in its entirety. This is the ultimate lack of Hakaras HaTova. Because the Tova is erased completely, Tova after Tova after Tova. It's as much erased as a hard drive that went bad. It's gone! And you cannot retrieve it. No expert and no program will be able to retrieve it. That's a Nirgun. And that's the level that they descended to as a result of the Chait HaMeraglim. You understand, therefore, why it wasn't as much punishment as it was inevitability that Hashem could not bring that generation into Eretz Yisrael. So to such an extent, as I mentioned in an earlier shiur in Kol Yom Rishon, that Moshe Rabbeinu does not pray that they should be able to go now into Eretz Yisrael, and that the punishment should not be there in its entirety, and they should be completely exonerated, much as he prayed by Chait HaDigel. You cannot bring these people into Eretz Yisrael. You simply cannot bring them in. Now, I would like to suggest to you that this notion of Kofri Tova, as Chazal understood it, begins with Adam HaRishon himself. And when I say suggest, I don't mean that it's my idea. It's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which you have in front of you. Take a look at number one. But what I mean to say is that it's almost a part of our human nature that whenever we are threatened and whenever we are challenged and whenever we are examined for some failure or other, that our initial reaction is to reject our own guilt and culpability and most of the time attempt to blame others for it. Adam HaRishon is given the greatest matana in the world. How do I know? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Lo tov heyos ha'adam levado. So I assume that whatever Hashem defines, especially since He created Adam, is fundamental to the needs that Adam has. If Hashem says he cannot be alone, then he cannot be alone. Never mind all those singles on the west side that don't want to get married. So therefore, you cannot be alone. And therefore, it's lo tov. So what is the, whatever they call that in logic, the inverse or the obverse or whatever it is. What's the opposite? That if he has ezer kenegdo, he has tov. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamos, Daf Samach Beis, or wherever it is, matza isha matza tov, Pasuk says, Kalashori below Isha, whoever is without a wife, is without Tova. He's without a lot of other things too. Without Torah, without Choma, but he's without Tova. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the ultimate gift. It's the ultimate gift. For a woman, maybe the ultimate gift is diamonds, but for the man, the ultimate gift is the wife herself. So the ultimate gift, if that's the ultimate gift, so what does Adam HaRishon do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, how did you manage to eat from the eights which I told you not to eat of? Now he could have answered, and it would have been somewhat truthful, that my wife gave it to me and I ate it. But he added a couple of words. Ha'isha asher nosata imadi. Hi nosna li min ha'et ba'ochel. It's the wife that you, Hashem, gave me. Now what does that you Hashem gave me add to this picture? Ribbono shel Olam, it's your fault. Why are you asking me a question like that? It's obviously a failure in the whole structure of the marriage. The whole concept of being with someone else is subject to all kinds of influences, all kinds of inspirations. She coaxed me, she cajoled me in only a way that a woman knows how. And the Mela, look what happened. So the gift, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you expect me to be grateful for it? Lo tov? It's a disaster! It's a disaster. So comes along the Gemara, and it says, you know, this keeps happening. Fal Yisrael, again, the Dor Deah, maybe with the Erev Rav. They get the mun. The mun is the best possible food. No problems of indigestion. The makers of Melax and Mylanta, they were bankrupt. There's no indigestion, there's no elimination. There is no better tasting food. In fact, just conjure up a taste. And you've got it. It isn't that dry and pathetic thing that the astronauts have to eat never. So what is the problem? The problem is, I can't sink my teeth into it and suffer stomach trouble. But why should you want that? Why does it have to taste only like melons or only like steak when it can taste like melons and steaks and like melons and steaks with asachas if you want? The answer is, it's Hashem's food. So what? So it means that we are Hashem's people. So what? It means we have obligations. It means we have a higher goal, we have a different inspiration, it means that we have to live according to a different level of morality, a different level of ethic, a different level of commandment. We have 613 commandments because of this month. Lo nitna Torah ela la'ochle amon goes both ways. You need to be the ochle amon to receive the Torah, but you need to receive the Torah if you are ochle amon. And so they said twice. They said once, and that's what the Gevurah Sari discusses. the Shagas Aryeh. Once they said, V'nafshenu yivesha, that's right at the beginning. Our souls are dry. That's like the astronaut. But then they said, V'nafshenu kotzav alechem hakalokeo. Kotzav. Nafshenu yivesha is more edel than kotzav. Hatzti b'chaya yipnei v'nozchei. Kotzav means it's disgusting. We find it contemptible. How could they say that the man is contemptible? And more than anything else, whatever they ate, they had no food. Hashem saved their lives. Nafshenu kotzav alechem hakolokeo. So the Gemara says they are kefuyei tova, b'nei kefuyei tova. Lest the person think that this is something that is rare and unlikely. Think for a moment. The Gabbai is giving out aliyahs. He's a good Gabbai. He's an intelligent Gabbai. And he works very hard for giving aliyahs. Figuring out who didn't have an aliyah, remembering who needs an aliyah, fitting everybody in, making sure that nobody is left out. The person thinks in his mind that he didn't get the aliyah that he was supposed to get because he got Revi instead of Shishi. Or because he hasn't gotten aliyah as frequently as he imagined, very often because he simply forgot. But in any case, the Gabbai is only human. Instead of thinking that the Gabbai is human and that he's actually doing a great job, he says, that Gabbai, he's a behemoth. He hasn't given me an aliyah. He gives me Revi. That's what he thinks of me. V'chulu v'chulu. But that's not enough. He tells it to the fellow next to him. You know, how long is he Gabbai already? 4 years? Isn't it time to get another Gabbai? He says, but nobody wants the job. He says, it doesn't matter. But would you take it? Of course not. But he's no good. Don't you see that he's no good? So suddenly the Gabbai is no good. The Rav gives the drasha. Good drasha. But it's a drasha that hits the person a little bit in the pupik. You know, they had a maitha, the Dubna Magid once came to a town. And the Dubna Magid was not invited into any house. In the end, he had to sleep like a beggar. Do you know what kind of a Talmud Chacham he was? Like a beggar, he had to sleep on a bench in the shul, in the local shul. Next morning, he got up and gave the drasha. So he said, you know, I came to a certain town once, and, you know, this is after having knocked on many doors. And all the doors were slammed in his face. So I came to a town once, and I was about to go into several houses, but every one of those houses had dogs. And I was afraid of the dogs. So one of the Mishtalim, realizing that the greatness of the Dubna Magid is that he gives wonderful parables and examples, realized also that he was talking about him. So he gets up and starts screaming at the Dubna Magid, "Chutzpah, you're calling us dogs." So the Dubna Magid says, "Calm down, I didn't finish the mashal yet." He says, there were certain dogs that were particularly threatening looking, so I took a rock and just tried to throw it at them. And I didn't know if I hit them or not until one of the dogs started yelping, and then I knew that I hit him. You know, the Rav gives a drasha, and he hits somebody. So all of a sudden, the Rav is no good. The Rav is not nice. The Rav should check his own tzitzis. And you know, the rest of it I leave to your imagination. And all of a sudden, the Rav may be losing his job. For what? Because he didn't speak about Judaism. And that, of course, is when you don't have gratitude. Because you forgot that the Rav visited you when you were sick, and that the Rav thinks about you, which not too many people do. And you forgot that the Rav worried that you should get a Mishaberat when you were in the hospital. And you forgot that the Rav makes it his business to dance till the wee hours of the night with you at your simchas, even though he's exhausted and he has every night simcha or two or three. And you forget that the Rav taught your son the bar mitzvah shetel, because he's never a little bit slow, and it took a long time, and it was hard work. And you forget that the Rav is killing himself fundraising for the institution not just to raise his salary, which is minuscule most of the time, especially if you are Orthodox rabbi, and without the Rav, there could be no shul. Not to mention the work that he does in kashrus and in this and in that and all the other things that he's involved in the community, which ultimately is a chesed shalemes, even if he's not involved in the chevra kadisha, because he's a kohen. So I'm not talking about myself. I am Baruch Hashem in the very privileged position of having created a shul that's completely my own. I should revise that. If I'm talking about Hakaras HaTovah to the Ribbono Shlom, I am in a unique position because I have been able to be the vehicle and the instrument of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's building a shul. But there's no one else that's involved. So Mela, I have no problem. I don't have any bosses. I don't have a board. I don't even have a membership. So there is this unique concept of Rabbonus, which probably didn't exist before me and will not exist after. But Lamaisa, there is in every Rabbonus that is a typical Rabbonus, that problem of Hakaras HaTovah b'miluo. And of course, I have to tell you something, and this is not a pitch exactly, but I want you to know who suffers the most from a lack of Hakaras HaTovah. A yeshiva, a YU, a fundraiser. I remember once in the Rabbonus in a different community, I asked the person to give a donation to our yeshiva. And he said, and this is a person that went through the yeshiva high school, yeshiva college, got a professional degree from the yeshiva. Basically, he spent most of his life in the yeshiva. And he's matzliach. And a great deal of that hatzlocha came from the yeshiva, both his learning as well as his secular education. So I thought this is for sure an easy touch. Why not? And we're not talking about millions. We're talking about a donation. He comes back to me. He says, I thought it over. Like, you know, he thought it over. Like, you know, so I'm not giving you anything. I said, really? Why not? Imagine what kind of horror, what kind of thing happened to him. What is his, you know, maybe he became of a different orientation, a different worldview. He says, he was once in the registrar's office and somebody looked at him the wrong way. More or less, that's what it was. I'm not giving. So what's the pshat? The pshat is that he doesn't want to give. Teich menoy. But what does the teich do? It erases the entire Hakaras HaTovah of 15 years? How could you do that? So it is the capacity of the human being not only to be absurd, but to be real downright nasty. And when a fundraiser comes, a person should ask himself first and foremost, what do I owe that yeshiva? And the answer is found in a very short line in Chazal. Kol ha-poseach pesach l'chaveiro nafsho hu chayov lo. A person who opens up a door for his friend, for his fellow, he owes that person who had the door opened for him, owes the one who opened the door his life. Now, if that isn't the description of the yeshiva, I don't know what is. Poseach pesach l'chaveiro. And it applies to Rosh Yeshiva too. If somebody hires you, you have a perpetual Hakaras HaTovah. That doesn't mean that the Hakaras HaTovah always reflects itself in saying, you're right. Sometimes it expresses itself in saying you're wrong. But it's with Hakaras HaTovah. It's with an understanding that without that person in your life, you wouldn't even be there. But again, you take it for granted. Of course, with my talents, with my abilities, with my capacities, with my knowledge of Torah, everybody would run to take me. That's why there are 1,000 people in Lakewood who don't have jobs. Many of whom may be more endowed than I am. But the problem is that when you are thinking along these lines, it's very easy to slide. It's an extremely slippery slope, this business of Kfuyas Tova. I would like to... What time is it, by the way? It's early. All right. You know, when the Rav used to ask that question, it was Sakonis Mephoshet. I would like to share with you a Sefer Chassidus, one of the three. Number 9. Al yirachim odom al achzorim, v'al yirachim al misha eino merachim al atzmo, v'al yirachim al misha hu kofui tova. You're not allowed to have rachmanis on a person who is an achzor. What's an achzor? A cruel person. He has cruelty, he's a sadist. You're not allowed to have rachmanis on him. You're also not allowed to have rachmanis on a person who abandons himself, who is callous to his own needs, who has given up. A Jew especially has no right to give up. If a Jew gives up, it's all over. Because there's a lot of reasons why to give up sometimes. Of course, the first and foremost thing that a person who has rachmanis on himself does is what? Tshuva. That's right. A person who has rachmanis on himself does tshuva. It's not the example that he gives. He gives a person who throws his money away. A person who spends excessively. So you have to have rachmanis on him that he doesn't have any money left? No, you don't have to have rachmanis on him. Because he did it to himself. And a person who gambles his money away? You don't have need to have any rachmanis on him. Of course, we know today that gambling is a sickness. It's mamash a sickness. It's like an addiction. A peculiar kind of addiction. Peculiar because it does not introduce any other chemicals into the body. Unlike alcohol, unlike drugs, but just the same, it is an addiction. But he says you should not have a rachmanas on mishu misachit bekuvia. Va'omer terachim alai shlo yivayishen. To have rachmanas on me, pay up my debt, I don't want to be embarrassed. Cover up for me because I don't want to be embarrassed. He says, no. Better you should be embarrassed. I don't want to be a misayeya la ovrei aveira. But look at the third one. Bal kofui tova. Kegon. Shenotzon lo echod. V'hu omer la'achirim. Mashal l'klovim hu mashal l'chli. A person gives you a gift. You turn around and you say, heh, how many years did he have this in his closet before he discovered that he doesn't need it anymore? Or, you get a beautiful matana Purim, this big shalach manas. I wonder who sent that to him. Or, you open it up. It's not what you expected, but it's a gift. See what this person thinks of me. He thinks of me exactly what I found in this box. That's what he thinks of me. So he says, you're not allowed to have rachmanis on such a person. What's worse is someone who gets a nice gift, but he doesn't want to admit that to anybody. Maybe he doesn't want to expose the knowledge that someone gave him a gift for whatever reason. And therefore he says, somebody asks him, what's that thing that he sent you in that box? Ah, nothing. For whom the shaker, he says. Whenever somebody does him a favor, he always turns it into a negative. He doesn't ever mention that he did a good thing, but if Chas V'Shalom ever turns out that he did something that's a little bit negative, he ends up being his sone. There are certain people that do a lot of good for someone. If a little bit he's not happy with the fellow, he erases the entire tova that person did for him. Could have been for many years. It's unbelievable. The kol mi she'eino matzik tova l'chol mi she'yaseh lo tova, kegon shelo b'fonov, lo yivorech es Hashem shezimein lo mashezeh nozeh. This is an interesting thing. If you don't acknowledge a gift, and you don't appreciate the gift, you also don't thank Hashem at that moment for having this person be the shaliach to provide for you. He says, every time you refuse to acknowledge a person, you don't acknowledge Hashem. A little bit like the Birchas Oreach, but he takes it one step further. He says, if you don't thank the person, it's because you minimize the gift. And if you minimize the gift, you can't possibly thank Hashem for it. It's a remarkable Sefer Chassidus. What's equally remarkable is how many people fall into this category in one way or another. It seems that Akaras HaTov is not only a fundamental yesod in Yiddishkeit, but it's also one of the hardest things to do. The Chovos HaVavos in the second Shaar has a Hakdama, what he calls Shaar HaBechina. It's not in your in the collection of sources. I didn't want to overwhelm you. Chovos HaVavos, though, is a very good reference, and you should learn it on your own. I don't mean the entire Sefer. Of course you should learn it, but I mean this particular point about Akaras HaTov. And he says the following. People are nichshal, they fail in Hakaras HaTov, in being grateful to Hashem, for one of three reasons. He dissected it. He analyzed it. And he says one of three reasons. One of them is that they always want more than what they have. So if you're not satisfied, you're not happy with what you have. If you're not happy with what you have, you're not going to be grateful for what you have. The second reason is a remarkable reason. He gives a beautiful mashal. And that mashal really, by extension, applies to every kibud av v'eim. You know, kibud av v'eim has many aspects to it. One of them certainly is Akaras HaTov. Make the following calculation for yourself. A person is a baby, so he gets diapered. How many times does he get diapered? How many times were we diapered? Thousands. You make a simple cheshbon. Six times a day, fair? I think that's pretty reasonable. Six times a day. Probably more, but let's say six times a day. 365 days in a year. Up to 3 years almost. So approximately times 365 times six. It's talking about over 6,000 times. I was diapered 6,000 times. I was kept clean 6,000 times. Somebody was osik, you should forgive me, all of you, both near and far. 6,000 times I was kept clean, 6,000 times somebody had to patchka with my schmutz. That's where you begin. And the rest is just, it's infinite. It's mamish infinite. Person suffers your peculiarities, dies every time you don't come home at 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, because they don't know where you are. But I know where I am, so what are you so worried about? So wait till you become a parent, so wait till you become a grandfather, then it really hits you. Grandparents, is 5 minutes late, is already a problem. They don't wait the hour. Then you have the thousands of tirchos that appear in them, whatever that is. It's just enormous. Where's the Hakaras HaTov? I'll see you next Mother's Day, Father's Day. I'll see you next Yom Tov. Meanwhile what? Meanwhile, you will have to care whether they're turned over in the nursing home so that they don't have sores. Unbelievable. Where is the Hakaras HaTov? The third thing. Oh, so what's the Chovos HaVavos mashal? It's a beautiful mashal. So somebody went out of his way, collected a huge amount of money, thousands of dollars, and redeemed a person from captivity. Gewaldig. It makes all the newspapers. It's unbelievable. What a chesed. And he's metapel with him, and he cleans him, and he takes care of him, and he brings him into his house, and he stays in his house for a month. Unbelievable chesed. Then says the Chovos HaVavos, you have a person that was adopted as a child. He lives in your house for years and years. You spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on him. You give him an education. You train him. You give him capacity. You teach him Torah. What is the gratitude of that person? Zero. Why not? Because it's so constant, and it started so early, and you take it for granted, and it becomes an expectation. He says the same thing with Hashem. Hashem does so much for us for such a long time, and from the very beginning, that we don't know where to begin with to end. We don't see it as a tova anymore. We take it for granted. We expect it because it is so vast and unending. That is the second point. The first point is we don't have enough. So we're mevatel the tova because we don't have enough. The second point is there's so much of it, and it's so constant, and it's so regular, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't ask us. Except on rare occasion, think about it. Because I'm Ozun. But we can bench without thinking about it. Haggadah Shal Pesach, Mikra Bikurim. A lot of people go through Pesach and they don't think of the Haggadah as HaKarasah. There is no sign that says Ribono Shel Olam puts up a neon sign and says, you owe me everything. There's no such sign. It's something that we have to develop in ourselves. And the third point that he makes is because the person also suffers. And here, of course, the Chovos Avos explains that since suffering ultimately is always for our own good, it really is a source for Hakaras HaTov itself. But unfortunately, suffering makes us miserable and makes us plaintive, and therefore we are entitled to complain against Hashem. Why are you doing this to me? I remember my father, Zalzain Gesund, he learned in the yeshivas of Navardik in Pinsk and in Bialystok. You know where the stipler was? You're going back a long, long time. You're going back about 80 years. Almost 80 years. So he recounts that the Navardiker Bali Musar used to say that the emes yisurim, suffering, is a wonderful thing. Yisurim amarkim abonoso shalodom, it makes something out of you that nothing else can accomplish. Suffering is really a wonderful thing. So how come we are against suffering? How come it says in the Gemara itself, when he asked him, Chavivim alecha yisurim, are you happy with the suffering that you have? And he answered, no, not at all. Lohem v'lo sekarim, I don't want them and I don't want their reward. So how come? The answer is because on the way to having the great benefit of suffering, because a person suffers, he's bo'et b'Hashem. He kicks Hashem. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, why are you doing this to me? It's so unfair. And that erases the whole hatzlacha of suffering. Most people can't handle it. But suffering really is a tremendous blessing. But because a person suffers, says the Chovos Avos, and he doesn't fully appreciate, like someone who doesn't appreciate the surgery of a doctor without an anesthetic, but it saved his life. So therefore a person erases all the good. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, in the end, you're causing me so much hurt and so much pain. So these are the three nekudos of the Chovos Avos. I would just like to end with an observation about davening. You know, there's one of our one of our very fine, outstanding young Talmidei Chachamim in our institution is a young man by the name of Rav Chaim Packer. Wonderful Talmud Chacham. Anyhow, for a shiur that he once gave, he put together a beautiful collection of sources on the importance and significance and appropriate nature of petitioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the things that you need. And he has hundreds of sources. It is, however, to be noted, and of course this is something that he himself discusses, that the Rav, the Zichrono Livracha, would, on a number of occasions, and including several of his writings, he would comment and bring sources and infer it from the halacha, that really the idea that you can just come up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ask for things, whatever they are, even important things, that is something that is highly questionable. And that wherever you find it, it is in the context of a takonas chachomin of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, such as the Bakoshos after Shmon Esrei, that the various Tanoim and Amoroim said, or the Bakoshos in the Shmon Esrei itself, where we are allowed to speak in our own language as well, for Esrei Refuah, for Parnos, and so on. But there has to be a context. Outside of the context, the Rav was very squeamish about making Bakoshos. Now, of course, we are surrounded by such Bakoshos all the time, whether it is after saying Tehillim, or whether it is Mishaberach for Apollo, or whatever it is. There are constant bakoshas, which are not necessarily in the formal context of tefillah. And indeed, in the Gemara, in Masechus Avodah Zarah Daf Zayin, there's a machlokas, what is the order that we are supposed to arrange our tefillos? Should we praise Hashem first and then ask, or should we ask first and then praise Hashem? Now, the proper etiquette of prayer aside, I wanted to point something out to you. Regardless of whether we are permitted or not to ask, we do ask, that is no question about it. But after the bakosha comes what? What comes in Shemona Esrei after our bakosha? After we ask Hashem, hodah. Now, there are two ways to perceive hodah. One of them, in fact, the Rav wrote about himself in his, he has a section on analyzing tefillah that is in in a number of sparim. It's a small piece, it has maybe 10, 15 pages, but it's a beautiful essay on tefillah. The Rav does not need my recommendation, but it happens to be a very, very powerful essay. And in there he speaks about thanking Hashem, ki'ilu, we already received all the things that we asked for. I would respectfully suggest a different perspective entirely on what modim is meant to accomplish. Because you see, every time you say to Hashem, I want or I need, there's a tremendous sakana. What is that sakana? That I am, on some level, failing the choivas halvavos' charge, which he has in the Akdama Tishara Bechina, and saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, I have needs, and the Mela, I'm not Makatova. Ribbono Shel Olam, I have needs, and the Mela, you're not that good to me. Because if you were that good to me, then I wouldn't even be talking to you. So we have to end our tefillah always with a statement that in spite of the fact, Ribbono Shel Olam, that I have just asked you for A, B, C, and D, and no matter how important they are to me, now or forever, I acknowledge Nisecho Shebekol Yomi Manu, your miracles are daily and constant. And without you, I would not be alive. And without you, I would not have an opportunity for anything, whether it's Panasa or learning Torah. Whether the fact that I can close the fingers on my hand is because of you, Hashem. Because there are people who cannot. And on, Shebechol Yom, Erev Avoke V'Tzorim, Hatov Ki Lo Chol Rachamecha, V'Amarachin Ki Lo Tzamu Chasadach. You know what that says? That says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I ask you for things. I ask so much. And I don't deserve a single one of them, the answer. And because I don't deserve them, it's kilo cholu rachamecha, you are a Moroccan, you have mercy on me. That's why I have what I have. That's why I have all these miracles. That's why the blood continues to flow in my veins. And that's why I can continue to see a sunrise and a sunset, and that's why I have children, and that's why I have a family, and that's why I have a parnosa, and everything else that happens to a person. And that is really the reclaiming of my chutzpah, the right to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something, always creates a level of chutzpah. Just the minute I open up my mouth and it says, Hashem, I want, or Hashem, I need, it's already chutzpah. How do you reclaim your integrity in the face of such chutzpah? You have to say, Ribbono Shel Olam, in spite of what I need, I have so much. In spite of what I need, I don't deserve anything. And then the person has justified his bakasha. And that's maybe the difference between the hodah and the shevach that comes at the beginning. We are praising Hashem in the abstract. That's not good enough. We have to say, Hashem, you did for me. You did for me. Al nisecha shebechol yom imanu val nifloseha shebechol eis erev voke v'tzarayim. And that is the incredible yesod of modim. And that's, by the way, why modim was given such an important place in the davening, that it has its own ishtachavoya, and that according to the poskim, you're supposed to have a special kavana in modim, just like you're supposed to have a special kavana and bow down in the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. It reclaims our hakara satova. So we find Hakara Satova in Birkas HaMazon, we find Hakara Satova in Haggadah Shel Pesach, maybe the most important communal moment in this, in the entire calendar. we have Hakaras HaTovah, the Shemona Esrei, which we recite every single day. And just to the icing on the cake, there's one time that we don't have any bakashas at all. When is that? Shabbos. Shabbos, we praise Hashem and we thank Hashem. We don't ask for anything. You know why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts Shabbos in an entirely different perspective, what I'm about to tell you. And it's a very nice way of finishing this year. Shabbos says, you have everything. Shabbos says, everything you see is good. Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. It's not just Mizmor, it's Mizmor Shir. It's a doubling. It's a double, a Neshama Yaseira perspective on the world. It's a La'asid Lavo perspective on the world. That whatever I see is only temporary, but it's Vetzayin Gut, and the Mele Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. And that's where Menucha comes from. Genuine Menucha comes from an understanding Asid Gut. Vayar Elohim Es Kol Asher Osa V'Hinei Tov Me'o Vayer Vayvoka Yom HaShishi. We repeat, everything that you did is good. Vayer Vayvoka Yom HaShishi Vaychul HaShemayim V'Arif. Shabbos. And that's why the Rav once told us a story that he was in Warsaw. And he came to a shtibul for the first time in his life, and no one there knew him. They knew of him, but they did not know him. And everyone came over to him to wish him a good Shabbos afterwards. And this person looks at him as if they were old friends, and he says, do I know you? Have I ever met you before? And he says, Rebbe, don't you remember? I saw you this morning. This morning? He says, I was the porter who was carrying your bags from the station to your stancia, to your hotel. He looks at him, says the Rav, again, and indeed it was the same person, but it wasn't the same person. The person that he saw was bent over the 1,000 years of Golus, carrying those bags, tattered, torn, deprived, hungry, sad. And the person that was standing in front of him, true, when he looked more carefully at his beged Shabbos, he saw a little patch here and a little patch there, but you would never have noticed. His face was aglow. He was alive. He was brilliant with the Kedusha of Shabbos. He was brilliant with the zechus of being part of Klal Yisrael. He was brilliant with his Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asharei. And this person was a prince. And what made him a prince? So that he was no longer recognizable even. Shabbos. Shabbos has the koach to turn everything into tova, to turn everything into bracha. And that is why Shabbos you don't ask for anything at all. Because in Shabbos is the motif, I have everything. It's Yeshli Rav and Yeshli Kol that we have in today's parsha. We should be zocha to live, you know, say Talmid Yechachomim or Bechina Shabbos. Why? But they have that perception of Hakaras HaTov. And if you live a life of Hakaras HaTov, you always see the good more than the bad. The cup is always full, not just half full, but full. And the things that you need, no, Mitchena Leidekin will take care of it. But Hashem, you are so good to me. We should be zocha to be on that madrigal.